You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat on this Wednesday evening, well, not a lot has happened in the last 24 hours. Thankfully, the Rockets were able to wrap up their first-round series with the Oklahoma City Thunder last night. 105-99 win, 4-1 win to move on to the second round. The second time in 3 years the Rockets have gotten to the Western Conference semifinals or further. Hopefully in a couple of weeks it'll be the second time in 3 years they've gotten to the Western Conference finals, but one step at a time. They're now in the second round. They're still waiting to see who they're going to play between the Spurs and Grizzlies. Seems highly likely it'll be the Spurs because Spurs have a 3-2 lead, and even if Memphis is able to win Game 6 at home, the idea that they can win both the Game 6 and then a Game 7 at San Antonio seems a little far-fetched, but obviously if you're a Rockets fan, you should be cheering for Memphis because Memphis winning, they're A, not as good of a team as San Antonio, and B, because of that, the Rockets would have home court advantage, and so the second round would start on Monday in Houston if Memphis were to somehow win. Whereas if it's San Antonio, the second round would start on Monday, but games 1 and 2 would be in San Antonio. Now the Rockets, they've got the benefit of rest. They closed out their series early, so they are not practicing either today or tomorrow. They haven't officially announced it, but it looks like Friday will be when they return to practice. I think they know that with James Harden having a rolled ankle, and also you have these veterans like Ryan Anderson, Nene, they were at their most effective to start the series against the Thunder. I don't think it's a coincidence they had all those days off and they won by 31. Energy just flying all over the court. So I think they're certainly going to prioritize that again. And with the high likelihood that it's going to be the 3-2, which means the Rockets are going to be on the road, it's especially important because the big priority if the Rockets play the Spurs is going to be finding a way to take one of those two games in San Antonio. A lot of folks are going to say, well, if the Spurs win the first two, then they're just holding serve because they won the home games. Not really. When you're looking at teams as good as the Spurs and the Rockets, it's not that difficult to win on the road. It does happen. In the reality, if the Spurs take a 2-0 lead, then the Rockets have to win 4 of the next 5 games. And that is a daunting task. I don't care if all 5 games are in Houston. So yeah, if you're the Rockets, you want to go in there and take one of those first two games, at least one of the first two, in San Antonio and using this time off to rest. They'll definitely rest Wednesday and Thursday, no practice, no anything. My guess is they return Friday, and then what happens Saturday and Sunday, I think they'll play it by ear. They'll see how they're feeling. They'll see how their bodies respond, et cetera, et cetera. But at least for the last 2 days, or for the next 2 days, I should say, they're off. They're enjoying really a pretty satisfactory win. You can call it a gentleman's sweep. I know some of the games were close, but you beat a quality team in 5 games, 4-1. They definitely proved their superiority. Also, I think there's certainly a lot of personal pride for guys like Patrick Beverley, James Harden. They couldn't stand some of these storylines, the hype that the likes of Russell Westbrook got. To be able to take down that team in fairly convincing fashion, I think that feels good with everyone in that locker room. So yeah, they're off. Nothing new has happened, but yeah, I think they're having a good time today. They're really enjoying their well-earned time off. So with it being an off day for the Rockets and not much new happening in terms of basketball developments, one thing that I went out of my way to do is think bigger picture, because we're not in the day-to-day, at least for a couple more days. Now, once we find out the matchup, and that could be as soon as tomorrow night when the Spurs and Grizzlies play in Game 6. If the Spurs win that, they would advance. Then we'll start talking a little X's and O's, what's going to happen in Game 1, Game 2. Now we've got these 6 days without basketball. And so for me today, I tried to take a step back and think, okay, what does this mean in the bigger picture? And if you haven't seen it already, please go to my Twitter page, at Ben Dubose. I've penned a tweet of a new column I wrote on the website for Sports Talk 790. That's the flagship radio station of the Rockets at sports790.com. And I've got a new column up there on my blog, Talking Rockets. And essentially what I make the case for in that column is that no matter what happens from here on out, this season is already a success. And I know a lot of folks may not want to hear that because you guys are competitors. I get it. I certainly don't want the team to think that way because the team, all their goals are right out in front of them. They want to win a title, and they're not going to be satisfied when they've got the Spurs and the Warriors. They've got a chip on their shoulder. They think they can win, and I hope they go out and do that. That's their job. So I don't think the players, the coaches, anybody in the organization is officially going to say this on the record, because to them, they set their goals high. You have James Harden, the should-be MVP of the league in the prime of his career. Yeah, you want to win a title. So that's what they're going to say, and they're competitors, and I hope they go out and prove it. But for me, I'm a little bit more of a realist, or at least I try to be. The bar is so phenomenally high with the likes of the Golden State Warriors and Cleveland Cavaliers, specifically the Warriors, who I'd say have the most talented roster in the history of the NBA. It is extremely difficult to go from 41-41, which the Rockets were last year, to legitimately competing with a team on that level. Now, I hope they prove me wrong, and you never know. If the Rockets get to the Western Conference Finals, anything can happen in a seven-game series. Maybe the Warriors go ice cold from three the same way we saw the Rockets, who are an elite three-point shooting team. We just saw the Rockets over five games never really pick up, shoot 28%. Maybe that happens to the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Maybe there's an ill-timed injury. You never know. I'd certainly love the Rockets to get the opportunity, and you certainly can't write them off. However, even if the Rockets were to win that series, I don't know if you necessarily call them the better team. It would be more the circumstances align, making plays in the perfect moment, that sort of thing. Long term, the Rockets have more roster building to do to truly get at that Warriors level, which they didn't quite win 73 this year, but essentially they took a 73-win roster, the best winning team in NBA history, at least by regular season standard, and then added Kevin Durant. That's what we're talking about here. And I know they lost a little bit of depth in the process, but when you have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they are transcendent. They are historically elite. So a lot of folks say, well, how are you going to compete with those guys? And I've seen some people basically quitting and shrugging their shoulders. That's not my answer. I want to beat those guys. I would love to see the Rockets do it this year. It's an awful lot to ask, but I was saying you certainly can't write it off. Anything can happen, and even seven games, I know we say it's a long series, but in basketball terms, a season where you have an 82-game sample for a reason, seven is a fairly small sample, things can happen. But long term, to get to that Golden State level, the Rockets have more building to do. In fact, that's a big part of why this time last year, the Rockets were gearing up at a run at Kevin Durant, because they believe that's the free agent who would fit seamlessly with James Harden and take them to that next level. Now, we know what ended up happening there. The Rockets, this time last year, coming off a very disappointing 41-41. Their image had taken a hit around the league. No one really knew what to make of the culture, the leadership. They hired Mike D'Antoni, but D'Antoni was 65 years old, and his last two coaching stints with the Knicks and Lakers, it wasn't all his fault, but essentially it had been 7 years since he had really been a truly successful NBA coach. So there were questions about the coaching, there's questions about the leadership of James Harden. We know the narratives are out there. Personally, I thought a lot of those were overdone, but they very much existed. So part of the long-term goal for the Rockets with this season, all along in my eyes, has been to reestablish this franchise as a true destination city, a destination where players want to go. Because last summer, it wasn't just Kevin Durant that didn't go there. First off, Kevin Durant didn't give them an official meeting. But beyond that, Rockets met with Kent Bazemore and Al Horford. That was their plan A. They both went elsewhere. Bazemore stayed in Atlanta. Horford went to Boston. And then, of course, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, those were essentially the plan Bs. And then after those were added, the Rockets were looking in the center market to replace some of the minutes due to Dwight Howard's departure. First name mentioned with them was Dwayne Dedmon, then of the Magic. Well, he ended up going to the Spurs, and the Rockets ended up signing Nene instead. So all of those guys, you can actually make the case that, especially with Bazemore, who's played below what I would expect someone signing a $72 million contract to play at, you can actually argue that the Rockets are better off this way, and that maybe those plan A's weren't ideal, because maybe those truly weren't plan A's. I'd say Durant was the plan A. That's probably your plan B, and maybe you can honestly make the case that Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon were the plan C. But regardless, even though it worked out, it was pretty clear the Rockets did not get everything they wanted last summer, and they were dealing with the headwind of the narrative, is what I would say. Everything from the 41-41 to the questions about chemistry, leadership, culture, all that kind of stuff. And so to get where they want to go, which is competing with the Warriors, the real way to do that, yeah, we hope they can do it this year. Well, hopefully get the opportunity to see it in a couple of weeks. But big picture, they probably need one more truly transcendent talent, a legitimate all-star caliber player. Because when you look at the Warriors, they have four guys that are legitimate potential all-stars every year, and two in Curry and Durant that are MVP caliber players. The Rockets right now, really, Harden's the only one that fits the criteria. Maybe you could really stretch it and say when someone like Eric Gordon or Pat Beverly really gets going, based on the overall contribution of the game, they can get close to a quasi-all-star level at times. But by and large, the Warriors have four and the Rockets have one. So you really need to build another foundation piece. I think that's what the Rockets tried to do with Dwight Howard, but the fit was not all the way there. And then there's a little bit of an erosion in Dwight Howard's game towards the last year or two of his contract. So I think that's what the Rockets are trying to do. They certainly attempted to do it last summer with first Kevin Durant and then Al Horford, two guys that were definitely max-level players, but they couldn't make the sale, and we all understand why. So it's like, okay, they got these guys. We heard the fit was good, but long-term, it's not just about this year. It's about reestablishing this as a destination franchise, rebuilding the image, and what do they need to do to do that, so that in July 2017, future trades, by the way, your, I guess, sex appeal, that's what I'm going to call it, your appeal around the league, that matters in trades too, because we saw at the deadline, Lou Williams essentially chose Houston. The Lakers had a number of teams interested in dealing a first, especially a late first-round pick for Lou, but it was a matter of Magic wanted to do right by the player. It's one of Magic Johnson's priorities is to get back in the good graces of players, agents, make them a destination franchise. So he let Lou have some input, and he chose Houston. So that was a sign A that things were really starting to work for the Rockets in terms of rebuilding their reputation, because Lou picked the Rockets. There's no doubt that other teams would have easily given up a late first-round pick. It's just he chose the Rockets. He thought it was a good fit for him, and thankfully he was right, because he was instrumental in the Oklahoma City series, three games to 20-plus points, and I don't think the Rockets win that in five games, if not for the presence of Lou Williams. So I thought that was a good early sign that, yeah, the Rockets are starting to be seen in a little bit higher regard around the league. But now you got to take that and go further. And who is it? I don't know. We'll have to see. The names that are potentially on the market this summer as far as free agents, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Gordon Hayward. You also have a lot of trade targets. As I was saying, you have a lot of these guys. Paul George is going to be talked about a lot that can sort of leverage their way to certain situations. And so you need to be held in high esteem around the league. And that's probably what the Rockets need to do. I know the Rockets aren't going to say any of this publicly. They're going to talk about keeping the core together. And really, they can, because other than Nene, every single player on that roster is under contract for next year. And Nene, even though he's up, he'll be 35 next year. I think he knows his limitations. I don't think he's going to be going for the highest bidder. I think he's going to be going for fit. So if he wants to play and the Rockets want to keep him, I would think strongly that there's an opportunity to get a deal done there. So the Rockets are going to say all the right things publicly about we believe in this group, we're going to keep building, and they can. Certainly they can get a little bit better. But you know Daryl Morey, they are always going to be opportunistic, and if there's a chance to take that next step from a talent perspective, they absolutely will try to do that. There has not been a July that's passed really this decade that Daryl has not been big game hunting, and I don't think that's going to change this year. So how do you rebuild and get to that level? Because 41-41 and 8 seed departed in the first round, that was not going to cut it. Well, folks, this year you had that, you had the uncertainty a year ago. You've got the coach of the year in Mike D'Antoni, the overwhelming front runner for that award. You're going to have a guy in James Harden who finishes in all likelihood second in the MVP voting, first team All-NBA. And really, the one guy who's going to finish ahead of him with MVP voting, he just dispatched him in five games in the playoffs while significantly outplaying him in the fourth quarter, i.e. winning time. So yeah, you've got one of the best coaches. You've got one of the best players. You won 55 games, the fourth most in the history of this storied franchise. Only two teams in the entire NBA had more wins, and that's the Spurs and the Warriors. And, well, the Warriors aren't going to be adding very many players. They're out of the room, and, well, at this point, it's about catching the Warriors. Anyone of substance, you're going to be looked at as a front runner severely if you're trying to join the likes of Curry, Durant, et cetera, et cetera. So, really, it's the Rockets and the Spurs, and then there's a huge drop-off before everyone else. And, really, about the only way you could say that 55-win regular season might ring hollow is if they underachieved in the playoffs. If this was a situation where the Rockets got dispatched in the first round and it was very shocking, that sort of thing, then maybe you say, okay, they're a regular season wonder, but the system doesn't translate. But guys, they advanced convincingly. They won in five games against a team featuring the MVP of the league. And the offense wasn't even that great. They did it with defense. So all the stereotypes out there, well, does Mike D'Antoni care about defense, blah, blah, blah. The Rockets just won a playoff series in five games against a good team. Defense first. So I think you have shattered that narrative. And no matter what happens from here on out, I think we all want to see them go all the way. And you can't say that they have no shot. But no matter what, here's the likely routes where they can lose. The second round against San Antonio, and if they do, well, that's one of the only two teams in the league with a better record. 60-plus wins, probably the most storied coach in the history of the league, maybe the most storied franchise, certainly of this century. You lose to them. You lose in the Western Conference Finals, second time in 3 years to get to the Western Finals, and then you lose to the Warriors, who have the most talented roster in the history of the NBA. Or you get to the NBA Finals for only the third time in Houston history, because it'd be the third time if they won it, but for one of the only times in Houston history, and you presumably lose to LeBron James, arguably the greatest player in the history of the sport. So either way, there's no real way going forward that this season can end in disappointment. Your regular season success has translated to the playoffs. The Rockets look every bit the part of a 55-win team that was the third best in the Western Conference and the third best in the NBA. And it's possible they can even build on that. I absolutely think it's reasonable that they can give the San Antonio Spurs a legitimate run for their money. But even if they don't, even if they lose to the Spurs in five games, something like that, is it really going to change the reality that the Rockets took an enormous step forward this year? To me, no. The only thing that was kind of left truly to prove in terms of the Rockets being back as a destination franchise was avoiding an upset in the first round, because if you could do that, then you are back. And by virtue of doing that last night, I think it's safe to say the Rockets are there. They are a big boy franchise. Now, that's not to be satisfied. This isn't all sunshine and roses. If it were sunshine and roses, I'd be telling you guys that I think the Rockets have a damn good shot to go all the way and beat the Warriors. I'm not telling you that. I'm saying this because I think the odds are strongly against the Rockets or anyone beating the Warriors. I'm a realist on that. However, the other part of staying real on this is realizing that this is part of a process. You were never likely to go from 41-41 to a contender overnight. This was about building. And so that's what we've been talking about a lot of this year, and really was wait to the playoffs to say, okay, how much of this is going to translate? Because we know, and a lot of us here in the Rockets community rolled our eyes at some of the talk about D'Antoni Ball not translating to the playoffs. What happens when you play a bigger, more physical team in the playoffs, which, by the way, is exactly what Oklahoma City is, and the Rockets punched them right back in the mouth, so to speak, out-rebounded them on the series. They didn't back down. This was a very satisfying one that I think was noticed by a lot of players around the NBA, not just that they won, but that they won in convincing fashion, and the manner in which they did it. Even when the threes didn't fall, the Rockets had enough defense, energy, rebounding, grittiness, a chip on their shoulder, whatever you want to call it, that they were able to beat a fairly talented Oklahoma City Thunder team in just five games. So looking ahead, no, I'm not saying that go out and pop the cork, that there's nothing left to play for. No, there's a ton to play for. You only have so many seasons with James Harden in the prime of his career. You're now in the final four of the Western Conference, final eight of the NBA. Yeah, you want to go out there and play. And with the right bounces, yeah, the Rockets can beat anybody. So, no, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, well, pop the cork, the Rockets have met their goal. Because there's still a lot more out there. If you ask the Rockets themselves, should they be happy? Is this season already a success? They would bristle at that because they're competitors, and to them, everything is in front of them. They are focused on winning that game one Monday night, be it in Houston against Memphis or San Antonio against the Spurs. That's all that's on their minds, I guarantee you. That's how they're wired. But I can tell you guys, as fans, taking a step back, yes, that win last night, it was not just significant from the standpoint of winning a first-round series. It was significant because long-term, no matter what the result is from here on out, the Rockets have reestablished themselves as a top franchise. They have put themselves back on the NBA map, and they, in my opinion, have fully undone whatever damage was done a year ago with the disappointment of that 41-41. And if you haven't read my column on sports790.com, I strongly urge you to do so. Again, Talking Rockets, Ben Dubose, that's the blog. Please do, because I make the case for why that win last night and why the series win as a whole, 4-1 over the Thunder, is even more significant than it might seem at first glance. Because the Rockets, I don't think they're a finished product in terms of roster building. The bar is so high with the Warriors, Cavaliers, etc., that they're going to continue to try and build every opportunity they have this summer, next trade deadline, the summer 2018, whenever it may be. And yeah, this series with the Rockets and Daryl Morey in a much better bargaining position. He has a much better product to sell. And so now that we have these few off days where we're not talking every day about, okay, here's what's going to happen the next game, here's the X's and O's adjustments, I figured this was a good point to look back at that. And really, if you think about it, I hope it makes you guys feel as good as it does me, because, yeah, there's a lot to be proud of now. You have a 55-win team, final four of the Western Conference, really matching their top three status in the regular season. So, yeah, a lot to be proud of what these Rockets have done to this point. And then, of course, still a lot to play for going forward, so let's not forget that. Maybe they'll even surprise me even more and continue to advance through the playoffs. We'll have to wait and see as the weeks progress, because while we still have five more days until the playoffs finally resume, whenever the Spurs and Grizzlies wrap up their series, and then, of course, second round starts next Monday, either in Houston or San Antonio. Final thought of the podcast before I wrap up. Let's acknowledge the tragedy that happened across the sports media landscape today. So many great journalists over at ESPN losing their jobs. And here in Houston, it's a personal friend of mine, a frequent guest on this show, Calvin Watkins. Just a harsh loss in the middle of a Rockets playoff run. I don't think that that's ideal for ESPN, but this day had been planned for a while. And I think the real reason they did it this day, one of ESPN's biggest ticket events of the year is the NFL draft that starts tomorrow night. By the way, plug Locked On Texans on this podcast network, and you can hear about what the Texans want to do. But for ESPN's purposes, that draft is a chance to change the conversation. I think that's why they did this today. You take this negative PR hit, all this unfortunate news, and all of a sudden tomorrow they have this big event, and it's kind of their feature event because it's not a real game. The focus is on the analysts, so they can put themselves in the spotlight. I think that's why they did it now, because they knew they'd have three straight days of unique content with their a lot of their analysts front and center. So that's why, even with teams like the Rockets in the playoffs, why they didn't wait till the season was over. They wanted to do it all at once. And you can't just do it a little bit at a time, because all of a sudden, if you lay off 20% of the NBA staff whose seasons are over for the teams they cover, then inevitably there's going to be a gossip chain. People are going to be trying to figure out what's next, and it's going to take a toll on the productivity. If you're going to do something like that, unfortunately, you kind of have to do it all at once. You can't just do it in small phases. So that's why ESPN, over 100 cuts, it looks like, across the company. And first thought, as I said, Calvin's a great, great guy. Did great things on this Rockets beat. Really hope he lands on his feet, and I'm sure he will. He's got a lot of connections. He's a tremendous reporter. As Daryl Morey said on Twitter, he's one of the nicest guys that he's ever encountered on the Rockets beat. I would say the same. So friendly, always willing to help, always willing to do a show, grant an interview. Calvin's just a really good guy, well-connected. He will definitely be missed. Maybe he'll stay in Houston. I do think he recently moved down here. He initially covered the Cowboys and Rangers up in Dallas, then he moved down here in early 2015, when he full-time became the Rockets beat writer for ESPN. Initially, he was in Dallas. He could go back there, I guess, because he does have some ties to Dallas, but I do think he recently moved down here. So there's a chance that maybe he can find another role. It's tough, because there really are not that many full-time roles, unfortunately, in sports journalism these days. That's the landscape. So if you really want to help the situation, the thing to do, the writers, the radio host, whoever it may be that you like, share their links. Try to find a way to help them monetize content, because if you share those links, you go to the site. Don't just screenshot something from the article without posting a link. Give them every opportunity to monetize that you can. That would be my advice to you guys, because it's a struggle, not just with ESPN, but across the board, to find a way to truly monetize content in the digital age and sell advertising across these digital platforms. I think eventually we'll get there, but it's so new. The digital landscape has changed so much and evolved just in the past 10 years with the advent of social media, that it's very, very tough to find a business model that can fund true full-time positions the way you could in the newspaper age, when there was an established print advertising and, of course, subscription business model. That's the other part of the equation. For print, you had the subscriptions, whereas the internet, folks are accustomed to getting things for free. So if you have an opportunity to help financially, it can be donating or as simple as just sharing a link so that person can get their link seen and boost their potential advertising revenue. do that. That's the best way to do it. I hope Calvin lands on his feet in Houston because he's a good friend. I'd love to see him get another role. I don't know at this time what it will be. If he wants to be a part of this show more, I would absolutely love to have him. The ball's in his court because I know he's got a family. He's got very close relationships. I'm sure they're going to talk about what they want to do next. But I absolutely want to support him. Everyone in the Rockets community could. I hope he gets another gig covering the Rockets because the beat won't be the same without him. So I wish him all the best. I'll be definitely looking for ways to help him, if at all possible. But regardless, I think he's going to be fine. He's an excellent reporter, got great contacts, and be it in Houston or elsewhere, I'm sure for someone of that talent, an opening should be his for the taking. The other thing I should say about that, make no mistake about it, this is going to be a negative for the Rockets in terms of their national TV exposure. It sucks, but Calvin was the link between the Rockets and ESPN. These days, ESPN is the biggest conglomerate, and Calvin was the link to Houston. He was the guy, any major game, you had him live on SportsCenter, ESPN News, all that sort of stuff. The stories on their website had a distinct Houston flair because he was with this team every day in that locker room in Toyota Center. Yeah, they've got some national reporters that I'm sure will travel. For example, Ramona Shelburne was in Houston for a lot of that first round series with the Thunder. And Ramona's a great reporter, but it's just different. Someone that is not there on a daily basis, that does not see these guys on through the grind of an 82-game season. That's what makes someone like Calvin's reporting special. And the same goes for TNT. Yeah, you've got your national guys in the studio, but you know why we call out guys like Charles Barkley for hot takes? They're hot takes because they don't know the grind. They don't know the ups and downs, what this team has been through, what they're working on. They're uninformed. And so unfortunately, that's where we're going to be, at least from a television standpoint, because Calvin, while he was a written reporter, he was also tied in with ESPN. The website, and especially TV, he gave a distinct Houston flair to the national coverage, and that's a big hole. The Rockets now, yeah, you'll have Jonathan Fagan, a lot of the local guys here in Houston, and that's great for us. You'll also have me. You'll have Dave Hardesty at Clutch Fans, all sorts of great reporters across the sports radio landscape here. So you won't be without content. But for the image of the Rockets, it helps having someone to bridge the gap between you and the national. So it's not just a matter of, well, Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley said so-and-so, whatever uninformed dribble comes out of their mouth on a given night. You have someone that can properly contextualize that's been there. That's the brilliance of this model, and unfortunately it seems like ESPN thinks that has failed. But hopefully somebody else will step in to fill in the gap. One thing I'm thinking about, NBA.com has taken some steps in that regard. They hired Fran Blindberry a few years ago. He's done a good job. MLB.com is the template that I say a lot of other sports leagues should follow if this kind of trend by cable companies and these websites like ESPN continues. MLB.com has hired a ton of fabulous journalists in Houston, Allison Futter, Brian McTaggart, Richard Justice, three really good newspaper veterans, all hired by MLB.com within the last decade. Maybe that's something that the NBA steps in and tries to do, because really there's going to be a hole, and that's why hopefully the NBA will invest proactively, because it benefits the league to have that kind of national context, to be able to put the local flair to the national level. It just brings a level of detail and understanding to readers across the country and really across the world that they won't get if they're reading someone who's just flying across the country and comes into Houston, you know, once every couple of weeks or once a month or just for a playoff series, something like that. So there's a lot of value to be added from those positions. Like I said, NBA.com has started to branch into that. They used Fran Blindberry here in Houston. He was a longtime reporter with Houston newspapers, and maybe you can see him. Maybe you can see NBA.com look to adopt the MLB.com model a little bit more and do what baseball has done. That's the first thing that kind of comes to mind. There are other potential pay models that I've seen across the landscape. You can't rule anything out because, again, we're all trying to learn on the fly here. There are so many possibilities. But the one thing I would urge you guys, if you want quality journalism, if you like guys such as Calvin Watkins, find ways to support them. They're not able to bring you the kind of content that you enjoy without having a business model that makes it work for them. So that's what I would strongly urge. I feel terrible for Calvin. And if you want to help the situation, if you feel bad, find ways to think about economical models. And if someone tries something that you agree with, especially if it's someone, a reporter that you really like, think about donating to it, because I think quality journalism has a big part in the marketplace. We just got to find a way to make it work. And really, that's what's going on. Don't buy any of the nonsense. I've seen so many hot takes about all these other things. Well, ESPN went liberal, and that's why they're paying. No, all of that's nonsense. This is the same media dynamic that's taken down newspapers over the years. The transition to the digital era, it's really, really difficult to make it work. And the way ESPN did for the longest time, because they were bundled with the cable subscription, whereas newspapers had the immediate fall off in print advertising revenue, whatever ESPN lost in terms of transitioning more to the web, they were able to regain through essentially keeping the rights fees, what they get from cable providers, so high. They're just able to push that cost onto consumers. So even if ESPN the magazine was making less money, even if the ESPN TV advertisements weren't going for as much money because they were losing an audience to digital, they had enough cable subscribers that they could just push the cost all the way through. Well, what's changed this decade, and of course we've seen it firsthand here in Houston with the failed CSN Houston venture, it's tough. The bubble has burst. You can't go out there and command the fees that you once could for sports content, because people are willing to cut the cord, they're willing to stream, even illegally in some instances. So it's really tough, again, to make that business model work. And that's the real issue here. Really, it's the same thing as newspapers, who have had enormous layoffs for 10 plus years now. It's just that, unfortunately, that's now transitioning to ESPN. They were insulated for a while because of those high cable fees. They just found a way to bundle it into their cost and pass that on to consumers. But in this decade, with cord cutting picking up every year, the business model is just not quite there right now, and ESPN has nowhere left to turn. So as I said leading off this segment, and I guess to close out the entire podcast, feel bad for Calvin. He's a great guy, great reporter. He'll definitely be missed because he offered a lot in terms of building the Rockets brand nationally and even globally with ESPN. And if you want to help the situation, you want to help not just him, but future journalists that might be in his shoes to avoid being put out of work, and then, of course, having less information about the Rockets or whatever team they cover at your disposal, think about ways that you can support the writers, the radio hosts, whoever it may be, financially, and help them build a business model, because we're all trying to find ways to work through this new landscape. And you guys as listeners, if you appreciate the content that we provide, anything you can do to help us would be greatly, greatly appreciated. So anyway, I guess on that somber note, apologies if I bummed anybody out, but I'll wrap up the podcast there. Again, thanks to all of you guys for listening. I'm Ben DuBose, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. This is Locked On Rockets, the home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Also email lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Advertising inquiries, questions, suggestions, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets sports fan. Once again, the Rockets did not practice today. They won't Thursday either. It seems like Friday will be the day they get back to work. For now, they're trying to rest up. They won't play for 6 days after closing out the series on Tuesday, and then round two starts next Monday, so they're going to use the time to their advantage. And then as soon as tomorrow night, we'll find out who the opponent's going to be. The Spurs can wrap it up with a win in Memphis tomorrow night, or it can go back to San Antonio for a Game 7 on Saturday. So we'll have a lot more to talk about in terms of the next round once the matchup gets set. That's why this show, I wanted to spend talking about a couple of bigger picture items, most notably the Rockets, you know, perception around the league, what this series win could mean for them down the road, but also wanted to address the ESPN follow-up, because certainly losing Calvin is going to be a blow to everyone. It's going to be a blow to Rockets fans, it's going to be a blow to the show, because I've had him on lots of times, and well, it'll hurt personally as well, because I definitely consider Calvin a friend and a very good guy. So hopefully you guys appreciate that off-day commentary. If you haven't already, tweet Calvin, thank him for the coverage, wish him the best of luck. And as far as tomorrow, we'll get back down into breaking down the basketball, everything that happened against the Thunder in round one, and starting to turn our focus to round two and what the matchups might be against the Grizzlies, but especially the Spurs, because that's certainly a probability at this point in time. So for now, enjoy your evening. I'll be back talking basketball with you right here on Locked On Rockets very soon.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.